Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, joined, as always, by our super producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
We're also joined by the Big Red Machine, making his triumphant return, Bob Finkbeiner. Welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, how are you?
It's great to have you back, man. I missed you.
Absolutely. I missed you guys.
Yeah, I know you did. I know you did, you sly little minx. So, Shin-Soo Choo reportedly turned down $140 million from the New York Yankees. What an insult, right?
Ouch.
Man.
He's better than Jacoby Ellsbury.
How could they only offer him $140 million?
I'd turn that down, too.
You would turn that down?
If I'm Shin-Soo Choo, I would turn that down. I'd tell him to go fly a kite.
That's right. 7 years, $200 million.
Jacoby Ellsbury?
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
Come on.
I take it.
Come on.
Maybe it's because I'm...
Who's better, Jacoby Ellsbury or Shin-Soo Choo?
Oh, Shin-Soo Choo, without question.
Well, then why would you take less than Jacoby Ellsbury?
Because $140 million is still a lot of money. And you're playing in New York. Why wouldn't you take that money? You're playing in the best market for baseball possible.
I'll pretend to be the arbitrator here. I agree with Jason.
Ooh, Bob goes for the money.
I want more money than Ellsbury.
I want to be better than Babe Ruth. That's what I want to be. I'm Shin-Soo Choo.
Not going to happen.
It's never going to happen. He's not that good.
You just forget that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. $140 million is a lot of money to turn down.
No, wait. Isn't Chu's agent Boris?
Yeah.
So are we blaming Chu? Or actually still blaming place upon Scott Boris?
I'm blaming neither. I think it's the right decision.
Blame is the wrong word to use with Jason. Jason does not blame either.
I don't. Why? You said it yourself. Jacoby Ellsbury. You'd rather have Chu than Ellsbury. So why would you think Chu would take less money?
It's a very valid point. I mean, maybe there's other teams out there dangling $170 million contracts out there. I mean, I'm assuming that there are if they're turning down $140 million.
Couldn't the Cubs use him, honestly?
Oh, I mean, there's lots of teams that could use him. The Pirates could use him. No, they really
but the
could.
Cubs,
they
the Cubs have money, though.
Wait, the Pirates couldn't use them? Use Chu?
We got Gregory Polanco coming up.
Oh, I would definitely choose Chu.
Okay.
Pun intended.
No way, man.
Right now.
Hey, listen, we're a small market team. We don't.
No, that doesn't matter. That wasn't
it's
your response.
It's an immediate upgrade
your
right now.
Your response wasn't saying we can't afford
right.
Shin-Soo Choo.
That's
implied. No, you said we couldn't use him.
Right.
Right.
We have Polanco.
Because if we sign Shin-Soo Choo, then all that money signed for a player who's just going to be...
No, that's not what you said.
Oh, yeah. No, well, that's what I meant. I shouldn't have said used. I should have said we cannot... take on his salary.
I mean, I agree with that, but
right.
And
don't tell me you can't use him.
Well, yeah, I mean, we could use him. Right, right. There's lots of every team could use Shin-Soo Choo. Who couldn't use Shin-Soo Choo?
Well, there's got to be somebody with three good outfielders.
Doubt it. Choo's going to be an upgrade over somebody in everybody's outfield. Make that your mission. You find that out and report back to me. Who Shin-Soo Choo?
That's a very good question, actually.
Yeah, every outfield could use Choo. Every outfield. He's an upgrade over somebody in everybody's outfield.
So is he an upgrade over Kemp, Ethier, and Puig?
Yes.
Ether, I had to think about it
for a while. I did have to think about it. I thought about it.
But Ethier, I heard, could be the fourth outfielder this year.
Right.
Or is it Kemp based upon his injury?
Right, yeah. I mean, Kemp's got to stay on the field.
Yeah. That's the downside of that, of my right. argument, is that you have some performance and injury issues with Kemp and Ethier, but when healthy, you know, that's it's close.
I'd take Chu over Ethier.
I think I might rather take Chu over Puig.
I'll take Chu over
Whoa, Puig. Blasphemer. The West Coast is going to hate you for that comment.
Wouldn't you agree they take Chu over Carl Crawford as well? Or not?
Yeah.
I would.
Yeah.
I take Chu over Puig because Puig did it for a couple months. Chu's pretty consistent.
Agreed. And yeah.
I mean, you can't be confident that Yasiel Puig's going to be because of 3-4 months.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, if we're talking about in a vacuum.
But there were some holes that were kind of showing. I mean, Yasiel Puig's attitude, for one.
that's a big gaping hole.
But anyways.
I got to tweet Jeremy Dorn about this. He's going to love
it. I don't think Chu's old enough to be signed by the Angels.
No.
So he's not going to go there.
They'd want him when he's like 35. Nice and ripe.
Next time.
He's not
when he's 37.
He's not quite there. He's like, he's not quite that banana you put in the freezer.
What about the Mariners? Because they got to go a whole hog here, man. They just...
At this point, I don't
see why
not. Well,
they just recently re-signed Franklin Gutierrez.
Like I said, what about the Mariners?
Yeah, we're good. We got Franklin Gutierrez. Feel pretty good about that.
The Yankees, let me tell you something. The Yankees would be wise to unload all or a combination of Vernon Wells, Ichiro Suzuki, and or Alfonso Soriano and replace that with those three with Chu.
No one's taking Vernon Wells though.
But what, don't you agree though? Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, you've got enough money for two Chus.
Are you gonna pay 100% of Vernon Wells's contract that you're already only paying 50% of because the Angels are paying the other 50%? That contract blows my mind.
Didn't I say they have six guys on roster now making $20 million or more for next year?
Probably. That wouldn't surprise me. Yeah.
Why couldn't they send Ichiro back to Seattle?
But we're going to spend our money on Ellsbury, who will be lucky if he plays 100 games.
Oh, Yankees fans are so angry about the Jacoby Ellsbury signing.
It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
Oh.
You got plenty of outfielders. I mean, don't get me wrong. Some of them are lackluster options, but you've got Soriano, Gardner, Ichiro, plus you know you're going to go after another one like Beltran. You spend money on Ellsbury, let Cano walk.
It's a mad, mad world we live in.
I used to think Brian Cashman knew what he was doing, but that it was the management that wouldn't let him make the right decisions. I'm not so sure about that anymore.
Yeah, kind of.
Because now it's different owners.
Right.
And he still is just
doing zany
flushing
stuff.
Flushing money down his golden toilet.
Is that the case, or is you think he's on his, like, his last hurrah? He just...
grasping for straws.
More winning season to save his job, get a contract extension for another 2 years.
I never feel like he's in danger of losing his job because he always can spend so much money to cover up his mistakes. I don't know. This conversation is really
devolved.
You really
say
devolved,
the same
though,
thing
from,
about Steve Phillips and he got Shin-Chu fired eventually.
Yeah. See, we've gone all the way from Shin-Soo Chu to Steve Phillips.
That's maybe the Mets will sign. Put him out there with Granderson.
Maybe they'll give him $1 million a year for the next 25 years when they need
to stop now.
Buy out the last year of his contract. All right. Way to bring Steve Phillips in here and really rile my feathers. You got my dander up. My dander's up. On today's show.
It's not like I brought up Bobby Bonilla's contract or anything.
Oh, my.
Bobby Bonilla's. Oh, that beautiful thing, as he refers it to. That's what we have to call the Bobby Bonilla contract. Today's show, we're going to be interviewing our new staff writer, Chris Bradley. We're going to be talking some hot stove with Pittsburgh. We're going to be talking some hot stove with Cleveland. We've already spent way too much time talking about Shin-Soo Chu. He's just...
I don't think we spent way too much time because I thought he was going to go to the Tigers. He used to play for the Indians. He's right in our wheelhouse.
I don't know. And now he's going
to
be...
I still think he might go to the Tigers.
Now he's going
to
be a Yankee.
He's got Dave Dombrowski all over him.
He'll be a Texas Ranger, sorry.
He's going to have...
I could see that, too.
Little Caesars on the sleeve of his jersey because that's the only way they're going
to
be able
Texas
to afford to keep doing this.
He'll go to Texas and hit 40 home runs.
He could.
That's my call.
But if he goes to Texas, I'm going to send out a personal message to the entire pitching staff, every pitching coach, every pitcher in the American League West, and say, pitch Chu up and in.
Or just make sure you hire, what's his face, left-hander Sanchez.
Jonathan Sanchez. Yes. Yeah, bring Jonathan Sanchez on board. Chu will be diving out of the box.
John Kreck style.
I don't blame him.
I can't either. All right, well, we've been holding Chris Bradley on the line long enough, so we're going to hop on there, have a nice little conversation with our new staff writer, Chris Bradley. We're thrilled to be joined today by our new staff writer, Chris Bradley. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Chris, we're just kind of curious, what kind of interesting insights does having a law degree give you when you're watching and analyzing baseball?
Well, you know, for those of you that are listening that know anything about, you know, law school, it's pretty much you go and they twist your brain around and just turn it into just this solid block of, you know, analysis. That's pretty much your job. And it really helps in the writing and, you know, the studying of the game, especially on the more advanced analysis. And I don't know, it's just given that I didn't graduate with any honors because, you know, baseball kind of took over. So you can see how it helped me in, I guess, both respects.
So I mean, when general managers and agents are lying, can you tell? Do you have like a lawyer radar that senses them out?
You know, more so for the agents, but not so much the GMs, because a lot of the stuff, it's like, you know, politicians. They put a lot of fluff in front of what they're talking about, you know, to the average fan. Will hear and be comforted by or pissed off by or any number of those things. But yeah, I guess generally you can kind of see through a lot of the BS, especially when it comes to talking about contracts and their value. You know, a lot of people tend to overblow those sorts of things.
Yeah, so when somebody says, oh yeah, everything's going great, you're listening to them thinking like, yeah, I'm sure it's going great.
Yeah, especially when it comes to injured players and whatnot. I mean, I'm sure the one guy you guys have is one of your writers who's a med student. I mean, I'm sure he knows when they discuss injuries, it's like it's probably either way worse or not as bad as they try to make it out to be.
Oh, it's always a treat talking to Dr. Garrett. That guy, he sniffs them out and he'll let us know. He'll let us know the worst case scenario usually, so we can prepare ourselves for it. So, Chris, we're kind of curious, what kind of coverage are you going to be providing all their fans and readers at Tri-State of Mind Baseball?
Well, I know recently, you know, a lot of my beginning work, I've been kind of infringing on your territory as far as writing about the Pirates go. But, you know, as the season rolls around, I'll probably focus more on prospects and minor leagues. I have a few minor league teams in the vicinity. I'm working on seeing if I can fit at least a half-season ticket package to the Binghamton Mets in. I don't know if it's in the budget quite yet, but I will be attending many games if not, so.
Fantastic. Now let me ask you this, because of your law background, do you think you could handle the life of being a sports agent? Could you be the next Jerry Maguire?
I highly doubt that. You know, I have a tendency to be pretty brutally honest, so I don't think I'd be able to lie. You know, I don't think I'd be able to get, you know, Alex Rodriguez another $275 million contract at, you know, whatever age it was, 34. You know, I don't know if I'd be able to do that.
You couldn't go into a room and sell that, huh? You'd just be like, yeah, he's old, his knees aren't working so well. We'll get you what we can get you.
You basically, you don't want him for this much money. I don't care if you're the Yankees. You don't want him.
I love it.
I don't know. That's not really what I, you know, a lot of people in law school put an emphasis on sports and entertainment law. I never really went into that. The only time I ever attended any event was when they had Chuck Greenberg. He's the former owner of the Texas Rangers. He went in with Nolan Ryan to buy the team there in 2000 and what was it, 7, 2008?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
He came in to speak. He's originally from the Pittsburgh area. And he's a great guy. I think he owns a couple minor league teams still. He owns the State College Spikes. I know that.
Okay.
And the Myrtle Beach Pelicans, which were in Eastbound and Down as the Myrtle Beach Mermen, if you guys are fans of that show.
So what made you gravitate towards writing about baseball?
Well, I've always liked to write. It's one of my favorite things to do. I you know, when I was younger, I had lots of, you know, blogs. I'm sure, you know, a lot of people went through that phase with like LiveJournal and all that nonsense where it was mostly polemic stuff. But, you know, as I got older and as I started reading a lot of these baseball blogs and stuff, you know, I'm thinking, well, I can do that and I can make a better argument than that guy. And I don't know why he has X amount of readers because he's, you know, not as good as me. And I know that sounds arrogant, but, you know, I've always strived to do better in my writing, and I try to use baseball as an outlet to write about something other than the law, because I tell you what, right now, like, that's another thing they do to you. They take your brain, they scramble it all around, and they make you different.
you're a different man when you come out the other side, aren't you?
Yeah.
So you went from like angry blogging about your parents and all the rules that they put in place, and you're like, maybe we could instead creatively write about some baseball. That's good. I like that. The evolution of Chris.
Yeah, something like that.
So
you can do a Photoshop graphic of that if you'd like.
Yeah, Jason shaking his head no. He does not approve of my crappy Photoshop graphics. So who are athletes that you enjoyed watching when you were younger? Like, who are your favorite baseball players? I know, like, for me, it was Ken Griffey Jr. His swing, just, I was infatuated with it when I was a kid. I used to go to baseball practice and try and swing like Griffey. Like, that was the guy that I really enjoyed watching. So what kind of baseball players did you enjoy?
The same thing for me, man. I think everybody wanted to emulate Griffey's swing, just, you know, because it was cool. You know, for some reason, the whole taking one hand off the bat and you're following through was awesome when I was little. You know, I'd always try to emulate that as well. And I'm almost ashamed to say this, but I was a huge A-Rod fan.
Oh, hey, no, we don't judge here. It's all right.
Before he turned into history's greatest monster, I mean, you know, when you were a kid, you're like, man, I hope to grow up one day and be as good as a baseball player as him. And, you know,
with enough performance enhancing drugs, I do believe that is possible.
Yeah. Exactly. I'd be able to make $250 million if I, you know, inject myself with something. But, or I can, you know, focus on defense and get paid millions like Clint Barmas. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Don't even get me started about that one.
But, you know, I enjoyed, you know, when I was little, I was a Pirate fan by virtue of my father also being a Pirates fan. And, you know, I liked, in the early 90s, you know, any of their free agents that they signed to help. I had a moment in time and when I just got sick of baseball because I, you know, the Pirates sucked and there was nothing to really enjoy about. And that's, you know, when I liked other guys on other teams, you know, like a lot of guys on the Red Sox. Like I said, Griffey's, the A-Rods, you know, the popular players that supposedly reach out across, you know, all spectrums over fanhood.
So are those the same types of players that you enjoy watching now? Like, what are you back? Like, are you back kind of with the Pirates, like focusing on the Pirates specifically, or do you enjoy everything about baseball?
Well, I enjoy everything about baseball unless it has something to do with the Atlanta Braves or the New York Yankees.
Sid Bream runs so deep.
Yeah, that cuts real deep. You know, even though I was only 4 years old, that's still, every time I have to watch that damn highlight,
it stings. It stings.
But I, you know, as you know, I kind of have a love-hate thing with Pedro Alvarez. I mean, one of my favorite players at times, but at other times, I just, you know, I'm wondering what the hell he's thinking about while he's at the plate, because there are some pitches that he takes hacks at that I just don't understand.
Yeah, I still supposedly have to draft Pedro Alvarez an apology letter.
Yeah.
I apparently said some inflammatory things about him that I need to apologize for, so Bob likes to frequently remind me of that. So Chris, thanks for joining us today. What other outlets can we find your work at? Cause I know you're a busy guy. You're writing for all kinds of different media outlets now. So where else can we find you?
Well, I recently started writing for, one of those blogs in one of those huge networks called Reading Between the Seams. You know, they focus a lot more on the gossipy stuff, you know, like,
oh, it's juicy.
Takes two hookers home at a time kind of stuff. I prefer analysis, and, you know, they also hired another writer recently who's, I think he's a college student. He also does more analytical things. So, I mean, if you read any of my work on that website, it won't be gossipy stuff. I think, you know, I just think that's kind of nonsense when people do that. That's why I like writing for you guys, because it's more based towards the analysis as opposed to, you know, like Andrew McCutchen proposed on Ellen, you know.
Oh, you wait, that's the first point that we're making a little bit later on. Jason's smiling, he's loving it.
Yeah, but you're not writing about that as like it's huge news. I mean, it's, you know, it's the guy's personal life.
Yeah.
Now, Andrew McCutchen hit 3 home runs in a game, that, and then, you know, you write about that. it's related to baseball.
So we can find you Reading Between the Seams anywhere else?
I'm thinking of starting a personal blog here soon. I've kind of have it in the works. I haven't really had a chance to sit down and write anything, but I'm another, I guess, megalomaniac tendency. I named it Bradley on Baseball, but it's going to be more, I don't know, driven. We talk a lot about baseball, life, you know, maybe a little politics mixed in there. I'm trying to stay away from that these days. But
hot button topic.
It affects us all.
Well, fantastic. We'll definitely make sure we'll keep everybody up to date with all your work. If you guys are interested, you can follow Chris Bradley on Twitter. Chris, what's your Twitter handle?
BradleyCS1.
Excellent. And if you want to find that, you can go check it out. We have him listed on our staff page. We have all the links to everything that Chris is doing. So definitely go check out his work. He's doing great work. Chris, thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I hope to be on again soon.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thanks again, Chris. We appreciate it. Now it's time for us to talk some Pirates baseball. Number one in your hearts, I'm sure. Both of you. Number one in your hearts. Number one in your programs. First, we need to talk about Andrew McCutchen, because it turns out Andrew McCutchen must have heard the big news about me. And now,
or me.
Or Bob, there also. Two newly engaged men. And he was getting jealous.
He just couldn't take it.
He was being left out in the action. Left out of the action. So he proposed on Ellen, which seems like a weird place to propose to someone, but
that's just because it wasn't an option for you.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if I'd ever want to propose on national TV. Like, what? What's the big draw?
I did a school.
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you what the draw is if you're Andrew McCutchen.
Higher profile.
She can't say no.
No.
Ooh. Good call.
Now I'm not saying it's a nice move. I'm just saying
that's a veteran move right there, right?
Well.
He's a politician, that guy, McCutchen.
If you want to start off on the wrong foot, she resents you right from the beginning. No, I don't know anything about their situation.
Marrying you out of spite because you proposed to me on the Ellen show? Yeah, well, I never thought of it at that angle. She's trapped there. You say no, you're going to look like a jerk in front of millions of women that watch daytime TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't say no to that. Ugh, very nice point. So congratulations to Andrew McCutchen for being engaged. It's changes you. I've had to, try and figure out how to be a little more
of an adult.
Careful, yeah. Here with your words.
Responsible, selfless. I think selfless is the word I'm looking for there. You gotta learn there's some give and take with stuff.
Knowing you, selfless is the right
word. Selfless, that's probably the right word. Yeah, I need to learn to be more selfless. That's definitely probably the right word. So maybe Andrew McCutchen already possesses those
qualities. Maybe.
Or maybe he's like me and needs to work on them. I don't know.
But time will tell, though, for sure.
I love you, Julie. I love you. So enough of Andrew McCutchen on Ellen. Let's talk about Garrett Jones going to Miami. New zip code down in the Florida. Signing with the Miami Marlins. Not a lot of not a lot of fees. He left and all the Pirates fans seem to be like, okay. Yeah, all right, well, see you later.
Good luck.
That's just kind of the end of the road. It seems like, and I think most Pirates fans seem to be aware of the arbitration cost that bringing Garrett Jones back was going to cost the franchise, and paying over $5 million for a platoon player who last season didn't even hit his platoon splits well. I mean, it just doesn't make sense for an organization like Pittsburgh.
Now, if you forgive me for not paying attention to the Miami Marlins,
they stink.
That I understand.
Great signing for them, huh?
With the trade of Logan Morrison to Seattle, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does Garrett Jones now become the starting first baseman?
I would
Without knowing their roster inside and out, I would say yes, yeah.
But yeah, I mean...
I don't know.
Because Morrison was playing there when he was healthy, and... Right. Yeah.
I mean, Garrett Jones is going to play every day down there.
That's scary.
Yeah, he's... I don't know. He's... I guess if you like platoon splits, I don't know what you plan on getting from Garrett.
He's going to be aiming for that big thing out in the outfield every at bat.
That's he's trying to hit the ugly circus that's out in center field.
By the way, I got an email.
Monstrosity.
Obviously, it's coaching baseball. The Miami Marlins are organizing some email promotion where you can come play a high school baseball game in the nation's most beautiful ballpark. I thought, great, it's PNC or Petco. Nope. It's Miami.
Miami. You can come play a high school baseball game there because you'll probably draw more fans.
Yes. October. Yes. October.
That's disgusting. What an awful abomination of a set. The bullpen. Have you seen the bullpens in Miami? Mm-mm. They look like the set of a Michael Bay movie.
Ooh.
They're like a giant neon green, ugly places. You could put just movie backdrops while
but
the guys
no
are
no love story in the background, though?
No. Okay. Right, no Megan Fox fixing cars or anything. Anyways, Garrett Jones, it was a guess, nice career in Pittsburgh. You know, we got a lot of value out of Garrett Jones for what we paid him. I mean, he was in line to make over $5 million, so we got out of that fiasco before we had to pay too much money to keep him around. So, good career. Happy for him. Good luck. So
$5 million, that would cover another player, right?
Well, he signed with Miami for, I think it was 2 years, $7.75 million. So I think he, you know, he's probably happy with that 2 year contract, I would assume. So after Garrett Jones, Pittsburgh signed Edison Volquez. I guess the rumblings are that he could fill the back end of the rotation, depending on what AJ Burnett decides to do.
AJ.
Yeah, it's
AJ.
I love listening to Neil Huntington comment on AJ because every time he comments, he kind of sounds like that parent who's like waiting for the kid to still mow the lawn. He's like, you know, we're gonna give AJ as much time as he needs to figure it out. You know, it's like when that parent's going like, okay, we just need you to mow the lawn.
Just get on the mower.
So my question for you is this, Andy. Burnett, by all accounts, really, really, really enjoyed his time in Pittsburgh.
Loved it, yeah.
So, is there a discount involved here?
Does
he wait till
that seems
All-Star break?
Seems to be what the holdup is.
Like, what's his deal? Like,
scratch.
Seems to be what the holdup is. Pittsburgh being a very fiscally responsible team under the current tenure of Neil Huntington.
I'll tell you, not
just going out there all willy-nilly throwing money
around. I'll tell you what the problem is, I think. That he was like, I don't really know if I want to pitch. I think if I'm going to pitch, maybe I'll just come back to Pittsburgh. Then he saw the contracts that were being handed out like candy. And he was like,
My wife really likes Baltimore.
I think that's the problem. And right now he's like, because I think he probably was pretty dead set on, if I'm going to pitch, I'm going to pitch in Pittsburgh.
And then Scott Kazmir signed an $11 million
now
deal.
Now he's trying to wrap his
or
head
Scott
around.
Scott Feldman.
Yeah, 3 year, $30 million.
Right.
He's trying to wrap his head around, you know, Baltimore and whoever else is willing to, the Angels, I'm sure, willing to throw him some
and
money.
Every day Neil Huntington's calling him, just meekly saying, hey, you remember that time you promised you were only going to pitch in Pittsburgh?
You think the Yankees would sign AJ Burnett?
No. I thought about it for a second. I thought, like, what if the Yankees? No. No.
I mean,
he should have Boston.
They could show up to...
He should go to Boston.
He should.
AJ Burnett's front door, I think the Yankees, with a bag of just $100 million and be like, here's $100 million. And I think AJ Burnett would be like, nah, I had my fill of New York.
But do you think the Yankees would be willing?
No.
Yeah, I don't think, I think party's willing.
The fans still have... My buddies who are Yankees fans still talk about the AJ Burnett years.
Yeah, he could be a good fit, though, in Seattle, honestly.
He's kind of like Chew. I think he could be a good fit in a lot of places.
Right.
I think there's a lot of teams. I think you're going to be hard-pressed to find a team that couldn't plug AJ Burnett in somewhere. But, you know, it's interesting because Travis Sawchuk of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review reported that he thinks in the next couple of weeks there's going to be a resolution. Very
he
broad.
Thinks.
I think so, too. But he said he's feeling kind of pessimistic about whether AJ Burnett's going to return because... it seems like the holdup is Pittsburgh's asking him to take a significant discount. So they're kind of saying, remember how much fun you had here? Hey, remember that guy? That was a lot of fun, wasn't it? You want to come back? Andrew McCutchen loves
you. Now, if you were Neil Huntington, Andy, would you offer him a one-year deal or a two-year deal?
One-year deal. I mean, because that's the way that it sounds. He's, you know, like, oh, just maybe one
okay,
more.
But what if he said the Orioles will give me two?
Exactly.
I'd give him 2 years. Absolutely.
So what's your money cutoff?
See, that's where things get a little dicey.
Because I'm willing to bet somebody like the Orioles or the Angels is probably willing to go north of $12 million a year.
Right. Well, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking probably the open market's going to be $13, $14 million a year for AJ Burnett, which is what we wouldn't pay him in a qualifying offer.
Right.
So we've kind of already set the market for ourselves.
What was the qualifying offer value?
14.1.
Okay.
So Pittsburgh looked at a $14.1 million contract.
But that was then. This is now. What if he says, okay.
Now that Edison Volquez cost us like $5 million, we're just.
What if he says, okay. $14.1 million. For spite.
.1.
.2 for spite.
He's coming to get that .1.
It's for tax purposes.
Yeah, but I'm serious. You think they're like, that set the bar for them, or they would consider that now in light of the market?
That's a good question. I feel like they've set the market at 14.1 and saying this is what we're
anything
not
more
pay.
Than that, and we're not interested.
You know, they're going out and you're hearing people, you know, reporters for different outlets saying Pittsburgh feels okay with internal options with everything. You know, they went out and signed Edinson Volquez. They're just like, hey, don't make yeah, you can make that face because that's how the same. I feel the same way on the inside. But, you know, they're looking at alternatives and they're saying we can compete with cheaper alternatives. We don't need to pay you X amount of dollars to bring you back. They're saying we'd love to have you back is what the message seems like they're sending, right. But they don't seem pot committed to it.
So you two frown at the fact that they signed Volquez. I love the signing.
I don't have much confidence in Volquez. I mean, if he ever got it figured out, maybe, but...
But if he's your fifth guy...
I'll tell you, I didn't feel confident about the Liriano signing.
It's pretty good.
And I didn't feel very... Really, I felt very, very not confident about the Liriano signing after he broke his arm pounding on his children's door.
Here's the thing, though. Liriano has serious upside. I mean, serious upside.
Right, right.
Volquez... I mean, last year...
I think he does that, too.
Last year, he's negative 2 WAR. The year before that, negative 3.6. He hasn't posted a positive WAR since 2008.
That's the thing. He hasn't been a solid contributor in a while.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm, you know, on record on this podcast of kind of doubting that Liriano will reproduce because he's been horrible at that his whole career. He's had great showings and then just catastrophes. But... at least you know that he's done it before, whereas Volquez, I mean, you're kind of always waiting.
Yeah, one solid year.
One.
It's one.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's played for what? I think 9 years.
Yeah, I mean, he's 30 years old now. Yeah.
So.
But is 30 better than 38?
We're comparing him to Burnett?
Yeah, because if you're comparing him to Burnett, 8 days out of the week I will take Burnett.
Yeah, Burnett's had 15 seasons. He's only posted a negative WAR 4 times.
But nothing guarantees he doesn't fall off the cliff though. Like
I was saying, Volquez has posted a positive WAR twice out of 9, and one was 0.1. So, I know what you're saying, but I think with anything more than pitching, and we're going to talk about this later with the Indians, you got to bank on the people that have done it, right? The people that do it over and over again. That's who you should be banking on. Anyone else, it's just a huge risk. I mean, it's just a huge, huge... We know doing it once doesn't mean you can do it... I mean, it means you might do it again someday, but it could take a long time. Just ask Fausto Carmona. Ask Ubaldo Jimenez. Ask Edison Volquez. He had a 3.77... Or no, that's the wrong stat. All right, sorry about that. Hold on, I'll pull it up. In 2008, he had 3.21 ERA.
So... if you're the GM then for a team, how much value do you place on WAR versus the market salaries? Like, at what point do you kind of find a middle ground where, yeah, he's done it, but he's not as overpriced versus he hasn't done it, but he has upside potential, he's a lower value?
I just think $5 million is a lot for a guy that's a pretty big gamble.
For the record, I was just throwing that out there as just an arbitrary number. I don't even know if I've actually seen the figure that he signed for.
Oh, I thought that was the
figure. I think it was $5 million.
Was it $5 million?
I'm pretty sure it was.
I don't know. Like, yeah, I think in all the articles I read, it just mentioned because they signed him and Barmas at the same time,
right?
To 1 year deals, and it mentioned Barmas' salary, but I don't know honestly if I've seen Volquez's salary.
I think his was $5 million.
Yeah, I'll have to go check that out. See what he signed for, or maybe that was why $5 million was stuck in my head was because I had read it, and just.
I mean, because that obviously changes things.
Right.
Pittsburgh Pirates $5 million, yeah. According
was
to
it $5 million
Baseball Reference. So I mean, that to me, that's a lot for a guy that's a gamble. Like, if you're gonna gamble, I'd like to keep it around 1 or 3, maybe.
Right, that's a gamble.
You know what I mean?
$5 million's a risk. That's what that
I mean,
is.
$5 million's a player.
Yeah.
Well, in the context too of the Pirates, is that $5 million more useful trying to sign?
I would have rather taken that $5 million and put it towards AJ Burnett.
Burnett.
Right.
If they're just saying we have an extra $5 million lying around.
Here's the thing. And this is, it's interesting because Burnett's involved and he's looking maybe one, probably nowhere more than 2 years, right? Because remember, I wrote that article, Andy, saying basically like when GMs from teams like the Pirates and the Indians go with these lower tier signings, like a David Murphy kind of guy, and it's maybe they overpay slightly in average value, but they get a short deal. They're buying themselves financial flexibility. Like, right. It's wrong to say, like, oh, we should have taken that $6 million and given it to Ubaldo. Well, that Ubaldo needs a 4-year contract.
Right.
That's not a fair comparison. It's not the money, it's the years. Mm-hmm. But here, because they have Burnett, who probably would just sign a one-year contract, it is a fair comparison.
Yeah.
Because, okay, so now you're talking about upping it $9 million for a guy that you've counted on the last couple years.
I think the other thing too to consider too.
So would I. Yeah.
Admittedly, all of the money that a team makes doesn't go directly into players. I mean, there's all kinds of crazy financial stuff that I'm sure if they put the documents in front of us, they would be able to...
We'd be confused, but...
Confuse us and say, like, well, this is why we didn't spend the money, because we're spending all this money here. But I think just if we're talking about in a vacuum, if you're spending $5 million on Edinson Volquez, and you were already considering bringing A.J. Burnett back, so obviously you have some kind of bank.
I mean, you got to figure you're going to pay him at least 10.
Right. Oh, so...
Definitely.
Right, so you add another 5...
And
then you just give him the qualifying offer. Then he's really not going to sign. Nobody's going to sign a 38-year-old pitcher for $14 million
with
where they lose their
draft compensation
and the bonus pool money.
Right.
So then you've just pretty much guaranteed if you're going to play, you're coming
back.
You're
coming to us. Right. I don't know. We're
viewing this in a vacuum. We don't know all the circumstances.
We're looking outside. I would have been very curious to have been a fly on the wall to hear the conversation.
And maybe there was a backroom deal where I said, you know what, we won't give that tag on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there is always that possibility.
To say, like, you know, we'll let you seek out what you feel is appropriate.
Yeah.
Here's something else that I thought was interesting, too. Travis Sacek, in that same article, commented on the possibility of locking up Pedro Alvarez, and he said, if Pedro Alvarez had another agent, he might be more open to it. Pedro Alvarez's agent is, of course, Scott Boras.
Vladdy Boras.
So... You know, he's going to try and squeeze every dollar out of it that he can. He's not looking for that.
Did you happen to see Scott Boras's unflattering remarks about Jay-Z?
Oh, no.
And the Robbie Cano deal.
I can only
imagine. But this sounds like something that Chris Bradley should go take to read between the seams. Well, they're going to love that juicy gossip.
I saw your posting about Eric Wedge and the, was it Seattle Times article, how he basically lambasted the ownership of the Mariners.
Which was
a great article. Made a lot of sense.
I didn't read the article, but I've heard, you know, it discussed.
Oh, it was great.
But as an Indians fan, does that sound like the Eric Wedge?
But the nice thing was
that we knew. This is the Eric Wedge I know.
But
silent.
Here's the thing, though, Jason.
Frumpy face.
Wedge, when he compared, at the end of the article, he compared the Mariners organization front office to the Indians. He had nothing but high praise for Shapiro and Antonetti.
Well,
and they do the right things the right way, this and that, which, you know,
despite what all the people on the plane dealer comments say, that's what the industry line is that it's a well-run organization, despite what my tribe on the plane dealer tries to get us to believe.
So
in summary, though, Scott Boras,
what does Scott Boras say about Jay-Z? That's what I'm kind of curious about.
He was not very happy that Jay-Z had basically the best free agent in the offseason.
Mm.
Now, he was able to negotiate this deal. He was
he not happy that Jay-Z is in the market now, or was he not pleased with how Jay-Z handled the negotiation? Because I have a little bit of a beef if I'm Jay-Z of telling Robbie Cano, like, we're going to build a Robbie Cano brand and we're going to ship you out to Seattle instead of leaving you in the largest media market.
He's going to have his own coffee so fast in Seattle.
That's part of it too, because
I mean, to me, that makes sense.
Is Jay-Z plus, like, another group, I think.
Yeah, it's like
CSA or I don't know what it is.
Something like that. Something,
yeah. So
it's a whole group of agents.
In essence, Boras Ferdinand being basically as a rookie, obviously.
She is.
But like you said, though, if you can market a guy, there is no bigger market than the one he's already in. Come for the rapper who he raps about making the Yankees hat more famous than a Yankee.
Here's the only thing, right? Though. Again, we're viewing this in a vacuum a little bit. Maybe because that's been a widely reported thing that was one of the reasons why no one expected Cano would leave.
Right.
So maybe he felt the Yankees were holding that against them in the negotiation, right? Holding that, like saying, well, we don't think you're really going to leave, so we're going to lowball you I mean, at some point, you've just got to be like, all right.
Yeah, I don't know. Kano said he felt disrespected. Got to go with what Kano says. He felt disrespected.
Well, Jeter said that I'm happy for him.
Of course Jeter's going to say him. That.
That was it.
Take the money.
Why no Jeter's, that's why Jeter's classy. That's not what A-Rod would have said.
Take the money. So, anyways, Super Agent Scott Boras, representing Pedro Alvarez. The whole crux of that thing is that they're just going to get to free agency as soon as they can. That's what they're going to let happen.
Really? A Scott Boras client?
Yeah. Imagine that.
Shocking.
That's shocking.
Imagine that. Yeah, they're not getting locked up to an Andrew McCutchen team-friendly deal, which I actually already wrote an article back. Maybe I'll have to go link it to this podcast, but I don't think you want to sign Pedro Alvarez to a long-term Andrew McCutchen-type deal to begin with. I don't think what you're buying out is going to be worth the risk of hoping that Pedro Alvarez can continue to develop. And I mean, he's a great power hitter. He definitely is. But I think when you're looking at where you're going to invest your money, I don't know that you're necessarily going to want to invest it in Pedro Alvarez.
Question is, how much more development do you really think
he has?
Yeah. I mean, this might be...
Right, this could be...
This is Pedro Alvarez. This could be it,
which isn't necessarily
it's not bad thing. But it has plenty of
warts. There's some warts. Don't you mention his name. Don't you mention his name in front of me. You mean you have to refer to him as the next Frank Thomas. So the other big news, and this signing I was actually kind of pleased about, the Pirates inked Clint Barmas to a much more team-friendly deal.
Whoa, stop. You were what? Pleased by this signing?
Pleased by this signing.
Was it 2 years ago you were like,
Oh, two years ago.
Oh, gosh. This is
not great. Happy.
And all I've heard all winter is how Jordy Mercer's going to be all right.
But listen, he's probably going to be all right.
And even when I said, why don't you trade for Esdrubal Cabrera? Jordy Mercer.
He's going to be all right. When we signed Clint Barmas, I was like, all right, now I feel a lot better about that. Because just what in case anything happens.
Sign Clint Barmas, you feel better.
Just in case anything happens.
So what this tells me is that shortstop will continue to be a black hole.
Dude, it's not. Lineup. If you look at Jordy Mercer's production last year, offensively, the production wasn't the question. It's defensively. And when you're looking at, and actually this was one of the things I wrote about when they signed Clint Barmas, why I felt good about it. Number one, this time his deal is only $2 million. It was a $2 million. You know, the last contract that we signed him to was a two-year, $10 million albatross, which, I mean, it was great that we had an amazing defensive shortstop, but not $5 million worth of value.
So in essence, he's saying if he can combine the mutual offensive talent of Jordy Mercer with the defensive prowess of Clint Barmas,
we've created.
You would have the perfect Pittsburgh shortstop.
Exactly. And this, you know, part of the reason why Pittsburgh had the highest ground ball percentage in Major League Baseball last year, 52.5%, which, I mean, it was far, I think it was like 4% higher than the next closest team.
So it's funny that all winter he's been telling me, like, oh, don't worry about Jordy Mercer.
We're good. We're good with Jordy Mercer. And then they signed Clint Barmas, and I was like, whew.
It's like, wait, sign Charlie Morton, ground ball pitcher. Must sign.
We're going to get to Charlie Morton in a minute. Yeah. I got some pages up.
Because he's Charlie Morton's coming. Oh, Jason. He's just licking his chops over there, rubbing those little hands together.
Firing barbs.
Well, let's please.
No, go ahead.
Charlie Morton.
Walk into the trap, please.
Signed a 3-year, $21 million contract.
How do you feel about that?
Like the signing.
So you like $7 million per for a guy with a negative 5.4 career war.
Ooh.
Okay. Now let's go take a peek back. Let me pull up my little statistics here.
Okay. Go ahead, pull them up.
Let's go take a peek back.
I've already scanned them while you were talking.
let's take a peek at last season. Now last season coming off Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, but he had 20 starts.
Yeah.
And he posted a sub barely 4 ERA. Or no, that's the wrong set. I keep doing that because Baseball Reference.
Just throwing you off. He was worth half a win last season.
3.26. Yeah, 20 starts and a 3.26 ERA, and he only puts up half a win.
He was worth half a win last season. Let me ask you.
But he craps all over David Murphy, who put us up like multiple win seasons.
If you want to go sign a pitcher like Charlie Morton on the market right now, what's it going to cost? It's going to cost at least $7 million per.
For a guy who's never posted a career war over 0.6?
1.9. 2011 was his best season in Pittsburgh.
Okay, well, yeah, 1.9, you're right.
1.9, which is what, you know, that was his most productive season to date, 171 innings, 171 and two-thirds innings.
Actually, you know, I had the wrong. It's, yeah, career WAR of negative 0.07.
Are you looking at, like, Charlie Morton from 1882?
No, career WAR, negative 0.07.
Yeah.
I had the wrong line. I still think that's $7 million. Oh, so much.
I mean,
were you a fan of the Brett Myers signing? Because that's $7 million for similar talent.
Yeah. See, now there's what you're talking about. $7 million. You know, we've talked about that before with Cleveland signing players, where you're talking about
$7 million for that is horrible.
What does this money get you?
Nothing.
$7 million gets you Brett Myers. $7 million gets you Charlie Morton.
This is what I'm saying. You don't have a pitcher in your system that can produce a one WAR season.
We absolutely do. But
$7 million couldn't be better spent somewhere else.
I would rather spend it on Charlie Morton. When you're talking about the philosophy of a team, when you're talking about, we want a defensive minded team, we want ground ball pitchers, we want Charlie Morton does everything that the team philosophy revolves around. $7 million per for three seasons. I don't feel bad about that signing.
Mm-hmm. I don't like it.
Neither do I.
I guess we'll see. We'll see. Come next season, you can rub my nose in it. If it doesn't work out.
I remember. Don't worry.
You'll be able to rub my nose in it for the next three seasons if it doesn't work out. So,
with that in mind, though, like the question Jason proposed to you.
Two seasons under four ERA. That's it.
Is it not worth rushing perhaps a little bit, Jameson
Taillon? Oh, no. Please, no. Absolutely. That is completely.
Will he not produce a better overall value than
he might, but that's not what it's about.
Okay.
But Neil Huntington's made that very clear.
But wait, so now you got $12 million in Edison Volquez and Charlie Morton.
McCutcheon's
leave Volquez out of this discussion.
But no, here's the point. You can
Alvarez,
let Volquez
McCutcheon,
run.
They're not getting younger. Your time that wins. We win the wins now, right?
Hopefully.
Next couple seasons, right?
Here's the thing, though. You can let Volquez run for half a season before you decide, okay.
This isn't working.
This isn't going to work. By that point, don't you expect Taillon to be ready?
That's probably what you're hoping, much like last season. You're hoping he's on the Garrett Jones plan where he's progressed. Here's
I've made my point. The prosecution rests.
Yes. I don't know. He's not a bad signing where you're looking at what value costs on the open market.
He's on your team. He's not on the open market.
Well, he was.
Then don't bring him back.
not for three years.
I don't know.
What I'm saying.
If that's what it takes to get Charlie Morton, I don't feel bad about spending $7 million a year for a guy who could potentially post you a...
For all the talk that we do about value, right?
Right.
So if the market price for Charlie Morton is $7 million, that doesn't mean that you need to ante up $7 million for Charlie Morton. Maybe that can still mean that's a bad investment.
Yeah, it can. But that's what I'm saying. I feel like it's going to be a good investment. I feel like he's going
seven
to...
7-5-12. Closer to Burnett?
No, if that's on the table...
Closer to Burnett,
got Burnett. Yeah. Now, if we're talking about that being on the table, I would absolutely much rather have signed AJ Burnett for 1 year than Morton for three and Volquez for one. But I don't know what's going on. If I were general manager, I'd feel much more comfortable about that and then replace those holes in the next coming seasons. Man.
Career whip of 1.5.
Let's talk about something a little more positive in the Pirates organization with these Debbie Downers over here. So depending on whose rankings you're looking at, Gregory Polanco is often considered either the best or, you know, second best prospect in the Pirates organization. He's been playing lights out in winter ball. He's playing in the Caribbean League right now, and he just went 3-for-4 the other night on the, what's the, Escogido team. The team Escogido?
Please, struggle to pronounce it more.
The same team that Carlos Santana plays on. But he's hitting .322 in his time in the Caribbean League. Started in center field, hit ahead of Carlos Santana, who was playing
third base.
Third baseman Carlos Santana.
Yeah.
Just the neat
Your
little
new
side note.
Third baseman.
Your new third baseman, Carlos Santana.
Number 41, Carlos Santana.
Last thing about Pittsburgh, not really anything too exciting, but they just signed 5 players to minor league contracts with invitations to spring training. They just signed Travis Ishikawa, Michael Martinez, Daniel Schlereth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Adam Wilk and...
Personal fan favorite.
My boy, Kyle MacPherson. He's coming back
in the saddle.
Yeah. So those guys will be coming to spring training. Good luck to all of them.
Yeah.
What do they say in the Hunger Games, Bob?
May the odds be forever
in your favor.
In your favor, I believe that's what.
Travis Ishikawa. Wow. I'm doing the little Hunger Games hand.
Great movie, by the way.
So, enough of Pittsburgh. Now let me bust your chops about the Indians. Go ahead, Jason. What's going on in Trab Town this winter?
Well, you know, it's been pretty quiet. We don't have a whole lot of De Niro available up in Cleveland. So the new news is that we signed Sean Markham and John Axford this week. Big names.
Feelings about these signings now, because I have feelings about both of these signings, and I'm curious to hear yours first.
Well, I love the Markham signing because it's $1 million.
As do I. No, it's not a million. Isn't it like a ceiling of $1 million?
No,
it's $1 million.
Or is it a base $1 million?
If he doesn't make the team out of spring training, he can opt out.
Right. Okay. All right.
If he makes the team out of spring training, it's $1 million, and I think he has up to 3 in incentives. It's a total of 3, not another 3.
So it's a total of 3.
Maximum okay. $3 million.
Could be a good signing.
As opposed to Edson Volca has guaranteed $5 million.
$5 million.
I'm just gonna throw that out there. Anyways, and we'll talk to Dr. Garrett at some point, because as you may or may not know, Markham missed almost all of last year due to thoracic, I hope I'm saying that right, outlet syndrome.
No idea. I'm just nodding my head in agreement.
That's it. I have some idea. It's when basically your nerve is from your neck area is getting pinched in your shoulder. Oh. Like it's either due to like something with your clavicle or something in that region. We'll get something from Dr. Garrett on that, but that's basically what's happening. So you can imagine how that would hurt throwing a baseball.
Very much so. Very much so.
That'd be a problem.
Now what about John Axford?
I don't mind the Axford signing, and here's why I don't mind it.
How much was his?
It was 4.75 base with a 1.75 in incentives. Here's why I don't mind it. One, I don't want to give Joaquin Benoit 2 years and $15 million. So I'm happy we're not doing that.
I agree on that front, absolutely.
And now he's with the Padres.
And he did get something like that, yes, right?
Today.
I also like it because he is apparently under team control for 3 years because he has 3 years of arbitration remaining.
Yeah, okay.
So you get... It's kind of a weird thing. Like,
he's 30 years old, though.
Hey, that's what's being reported.
That doesn't seem to jive, but all right.
Okay. Well, I think it just depends how long,
right.
You know, you
right. Yeah.
languished in the minors. when you got your contract and everything else. I also don't mind it because while we're spending money on a closer, okay, because that's what they're saying. They're saying this he's going to be the closer. And of course, you know, that could, you know, you could argue that's a bad allocation of resources. But by spending a little money on a closer, it allows us to keep our two best relievers, Cody Allen and Brian Shaw, out of the closer's role, which I think we might all agree is not always the most stressful part of the game. You know, like Terry Francona, when he said we need to sign a closer, he made the point of saying, I want to be able to use Cody Allen to put out a fire when I need him.
Right.
I don't want to be like, well, I got to use Cody in the ninth, so I guess I'm going to go to Preston Gilmett to snuff out this rally in the seventh inning. You know what I mean?
Right.
One kind of interesting note for it, I'm sure you're pulling stuff up right now, is before you make your points, is Axford hits all of those bonus levels. He makes exactly the same amount that Chris Perez made 2 years ago.
Here, I like the Axford signing.
Because he has an awesome mustache.
Theory. Amazing
or
mustache.
Or goatee,
love
depending on how
amazing
he feels.
Mustache. And Canadian. And we both know how much I love Canadian baseball players. Like,
he's a good...
Like James
Scraggly
Italian.
Replacement for Chris
Notre
Perez.
Dame and Canisius College in Buffalo.
Yes. So, like the signing in theory.
Come on, get it out. We're running out of time. We talked about the Pirates for way too long.
Well, hey, I was talking about the Pirates for way too long. I was letting you guys just pile it on me. And I think Cleveland does need to rebuild their bullpen. So if you're going to rebuild your bullpen, again, like, what are your alternatives? Do you want to sign a player for multiple years like Joe Smith or Joaquin Benoit? Or...
Which, I'm on the record saying I would have signed Joe Smith even for 3, remember?
Yeah.
I've said that
Which I don't agree with. I think that's a crazy idea. I think that's craziness. So I guess I like it in the capacity that you needed a relief pitcher to go in your bullpen. But I kind of would pose you the same question. You don't think that you have a guy in your, and maybe you don't actually, but you don't have a guy in your farm system that could come up and fill in a middle relief role if you want to bump one of your other relief pitchers into that closing role? Because you have guys that have closer stuff. You absolutely have guys that have
Cody Allen,
that could finish a game Brian and make a manager Shaw. Feel comfortable at the end of the game, whatever all that reason they like those guys.
I think it's a twofold thing. I think one, all of those guys, they do have a lot of bullpen depth in the minors, but those guys are very unproven. CC Lee, Preston Gilman, they had some experience last year, but those aren't guys right now that you're like, oh yeah, I can put CC Lee in bases loaded in the sixth inning and he's going to get out of it. I think they do feel that way about Shaw and Allen. So they're trying to hold on. So they're trying to be able to use him in that role. I think the problem that they're trying to solve right now is Vinny Pastano.
Because
if Vinny Pastano didn't have a absolute clunker last year, you don't sign John Axford. You go and sign, you know, I don't know, Boone Logan or some, you know what I mean? But somebody you just kind of plug in a spot
right
like that, not a high profile guy. So I think in some ways, like we were talking about Volquez, and I was saying like, oh, come on, you give Volquez half a season of rope. And if he's not working out, you cut bait because it was $5 million. I think we know they'll do that because they did it with Reynolds. Mm-hmm. It took them a while, a lot longer than some people would have let it run.
It was a painful while.
Right, but they weren't playing him for a long stretch of that at the end. He was just vanquished on the bench. But I think that's what they're going to do. They're hoping that they're going to basically give Axford half a season. If you got it, you got it. If not, by that point, we hope Pastano puts it together, or we come to count on someone like CC Lee, where we can pull Cody Allen or Brian Shaw out of one of those spots.
Well, you made all my counterpoints before I had a chance to make them. That's
a sign of a good debater.
Good job with that. I just leave myself open to abuse. I stand here and just let you sling just awful, mean things about my players that we sign.
True things.
The truth hurts. So what else is going on? You guys had some other signings.
Well, you know, we did the minor league dance that we continue to do. The Matt Trainer. Bob's rolling his eyes.
Do we mean Misty May Trainer's husband?
Yes, Mr. Trainer.
Mr.
May Trainer.
Mr. May Trainer. I'm going to have a jersey made up with that.
Who I'm pretty sure missed all last season because Matt LaPorta ran him over. Yeah.
He missed all last year, yes, he did.
Because Matt LaPorta ran into him at home plate the season before. Okay. Pretty positive about that. Tyler Cloyd, which is this relief pitcher they've been jockeying in and off the 40-man all winner. Matt Carson, they re-signed him. Crash Carson. And David Adams and David Cooper. And David Cooper has a minor league, or he has a major league deal. So,
as does Adams, though, too.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's right. Cooper was the guy they signed at the end. In last August, who had back surgery, and he had the opt-out if he didn't get called up by September, and they didn't call him up. He's got some kind of interesting numbers power-wise, but it's, you know, you were comparing him, Bob, to kind of like Lyle Overbay. Right. But I don't know where exactly he's going to fit, because we know Terry Francona is going to want a 13-man bullpen, if at all possible. And we're going to have Giambi.
That's just it. To me, it speaks of if Jason can't hit in the spring.
I agree.
Maybe you become more of a manager.
I agree. I think.
And then Cooper fills that spot that
Because it's
had.
Interesting, you know, that they bring in someone that they've had a little experience with in the past who fits almost that same exact role. And it's kind of their safeguard. I agree. In case Giambi just looks even more washed up. As Andy mentioned earlier, Carlos Santana made his winter ball debut at third base this past
week. Now, how do you feel about this? How do you guys feel about Santana at third base? Well, for fantasy purposes, love it.
He's played at least two. I think maybe three.
Yeah.
I love it.
At least two errors also.
Yeah.
Because what is that opening up space for?
Well, it's opening up space for this David Cooper or Jesus Aguilar.
Oh, there we right? go.
Because if we're going to go whole hog with Yan Gomes, then Carlos is first baseman. Oh, wait. We signed Nick Swisher to the largest contract in club history. So I guess he's going to DH. Well, I mean, Jesus Aguilar, we saw it. We've seen him play first base. He's saved because he's huge.
Right.
You know, that's how he's saved, but he's hurt because he's huge. Like, he's just not very nimble out there.
He's a full year at Columbus.
You think so?
I think he does.
I think he's going to be up at some point this year.
I agree, but I think we want to see how he does before
I think,
April, May, June.
I think he'll, yeah, he's going to start in Columbus. I think.
You don't think they're going to put him on the Lonnie Chisenhall fast track?
I think even if he tears the cover off it in spring training, they're going to send him to Columbus. Although, there's something to be said about riding the hot hand. That's what they did to Lonnie. They sent him down. He's never hit like that since he had that hot spring training. But anyways, Santana did debut at third. He's hitting, you know, like Santana does. He posts these lines of like a double, a walk on base 15 times. That doesn't matter. It's winter ball. He did make, in his first game, he made two errors on the same play. I think it was the first inning, where he booted a ball, picked it up, and, I don't know, chucked it in the stands or something. But he did make a really nice play later in the game, supposedly, where he dove to his left, got up, threw the ball okay to first. It was a one-hopper, but the first baseman dug it out, saved his butt. If he could just play 30 games at third base.
Just another way to fit him in the lineup, just another way to
keep. It would help the rotation so much. You know, because you could protect Chisenhall more against lefties. You wouldn't always have to play Avilas over there. Freeze you up to trade as Drupal Cabrera if that's what you want to do.
Which they should have done a couple years ago.
That's a whole other. We discussed that ad nauseum.
Oh, boy.
You know, but he doesn't have to be Travis Fryman over there. Like, as Andy said the other night, I was talking to him on the phone, Miguel Cabrera plays third base for the Tigers the last, was it 2 years?
Yeah.
Last 2 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh? He can't be any worse than that.
Right.
I hope.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Those are famous last words that someday we'll put in a drop.
So we'll see. We'll see.
So,
but they're also moving Cabrera back to first base, though.
Right. Well, that's just because Cabrera wanted to go back. He's just
and I think
saw that they killed him defensively too.
Do you think though that part of that is because he's been so having so many injury problems?
Yeah,
they're like,
I think he just realized how much it's wearing. I mean, Cabrera came to the front office, like he said in the media.
Oh yeah,
he said I want to go back to first base. And Dombrowski's actually initial reaction was to say, we'll see. We'll do what's best for the team. Like, in a very, like, PR kind of way. And in my head, I'm like, I'm surprised, like, Dombrowski wasn't throwing confetti up like, oh, yay, he agrees that's a good idea.
Don't they only have Victor signed for one more year?
Yes.
All right, that's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
But now, also, you have to point out, the defensive run saved. Cabrera is one of probably the bottom five at third base. They had to get him off first base.
Third base. Yeah.
He's just not. Kills him there.
He does. He really does. I just, not to get into the Tigers, I think I would have tried to move Victor rather than Prince. Just let Prince DH. Or Miggy.
Or alternate him.
Well, I think everybody assumed that they were doing that to free up some money to make a splash in the free agent market, which they have yet to really make. Or, you know, there was the rumblings that they want to do that for the Scherzer deal. So I guess we'll have to see.
I'm not sold on the Tigers offseason moves, but that's another
completely different podcast.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, what about Drew Stubbs? Because
Drew Stubbs was traded today, as Bob reported shortly before the podcast.
Breaking news from Bob.
Yeah, they traded Drew Stubbs.
Hi guys, by the way, Stubbs was traded.
You guys see Drew Stubbs traded?
Traded Drew Stubbs straight up to the Rockies for left-handed pitcher Josh Outman,
which is a great name for a pitcher.
Outman, yeah, I know.
Regardless of
except
how he actually
performs. Except when he faces right-hand batters.
Yeah.
Yeah, which Bob reports is horrible.
They should call him Josh Home Runman.
You know, I don't really have much of a comment.
Just,
I mean,
one of those things.
They saved about $2.5 million by getting rid of Stubbs. They have scads of outfielders. I mean, Tyler Holt is probably capable of doing what Drew Stubbs did. So, sure.
Right.
He's left-handed. He throws the ball from the mound.
We're just putting time in here. I wish Tim Fedorov would have a better chance.
Yeah, well, moving on.
Yeah.
Water under the bridge.
So, what about your starting rotation going into next season? Well, how do you feel about it?
And this is kind of what, you know, we were talking about earlier. Okay, so everybody's clamoring. You know, they didn't sign a starter. They didn't ante up $5 million for Edison Volquez. They went for the $1 million Sean Markham, true wild card. So they've got Masterson, Kluber, Salazar, McAllister. I prefer them in that order, although the plain dealer often puts it as Masterson, Salazar, Kluber, McAllister. I don't have as much faith in someone that did it like 10 times as someone who has done it a little more than that. But
right.
Point being, that's our four. I mean, we're pretty much stuck to that core. They had a really good season last year. Each member of that four.
Yeah.
I think the only one that didn't exceed expectations out of that four was Masterson.
Really?
Who had a good year?
Because I think McAllister kind of started off really well.
He leveled out. He had a little Jeff Locke trajectory to his season, although he had the finger
injury.
Right. So that's what I mean. You can't count on McAllister to return to any kind of form because he didn't show at the end of the year right. that he had regained it. Kluber showed it a little more, you know, that he had recovered from the finger injury, but was not the same Corey Kluber that we saw. And Salazar, I mean, we can all agree he overachieved. No one saw that coming.
Right.
Even the Indians, you know, front office, I don't think imagined he was going to be that electric as a starter from the beginning.
Now, in fact, though, entering 2014 is this. Only one of those four have ever pitched 150 innings or more in a season.
Yeah. I would second that.
That to me, like,
here's
those many, many question marks.
Okay, so we look at who the options are for the fifth spot and who those depth guys are.
Right.
You got Markham.
Yep.
You've got Bauer. You got Carrasco, and you got Tomlin. It's not to say you don't have options, okay, but these are basically, other than Markham and Tomlin, because he was hurt last year, these are the same depth options we had last year. And we can all remember how we thought we had options, and then when Carrasco's throwing bean balls and Bauer can't find the plate, all of a sudden we don't have any options.
Yep.
So what we've found, which is really interesting, is as soon as they didn't sign a starter, the PR blitz began, right? Mm-hmm. Carlos Carrasco is going to be on this team. We have the utmost faith in him. He's got the stuff, blah, 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 blah. Then the Trevor Bauer PR blitz began. We've come to an agreement with Trevor at the end of the season about what his delivery should look like. These are basically quotes, but we'll call them paraphrases. We've come to an agreement with Trevor about what his delivery should look like. We have coaches out wherever he lives, basically, or at our training facility where he's reporting, blah, 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 blah. We have videotape of it. We're so pleased with the progress. This is a quote. There are scouts, the quote begins now, who feel that Bauer looks like he did when he came out of UCLA.
Don't say it to me.
Younger?
Mechanics-wise.
Oh, mechanics-wise.
He's younger. A better rapper.
I thought maybe surgery.
This is the question. This is the PR blitz. Do we believe it?
No, but no. I wish Chris Bradley were here to respond to that in lawyer talk.
No.
Do you have any faith in Trevor Bauer? Wow, that's a long pause.
No. That is one awkward pause.
I don't have faith in him right now as a full-time legitimate starting pitcher. I feel that he could contribute in long relief, a spot start every now and then. I don't think he's ready yet. He's only 22 years old still, isn't he? Right?
23 next year, I think.
23, but he's still very young.
Right, but the the Diamondbacks butchered him because they brought him up too early. He's scarred for life now.
Well, he didn't help his cause either with his attitude, I guess.
I don't buy the attitude. To me, that was a Miguel Montero attitude problem more than anything else. Yeah, I mean,
I'm like Kirk Gibson.
It was a Kevin Towers, Miguel Montero attitude problem.
No, Towers.
Kevin Towers gives up on pitchers. I mean, he gave up on Max Scherzer.
Right.
And he just gave up on
Tyler Skaggs.
Archie Bradley's got to be just chewing his fingernails every night.
He's got to be just ready to drop the hat on Archie Bradley.
Archie Bradley's just walking on eggshells over there every day.
Time out though for a second. You're the Angels. You traded Skaggs away to the Diamondbacks in the first place, and he got him back.
Good for them.
The madness.
That's amazing.
The madness of the Diamondbacks and the Angels cannot be explained.
So you're just saying Bauer's getting a bad rap is all. And you think Cleveland's going to straighten him out?
Here's what I think. I don't have faith that he, you know, can go out and do 30 starts. I mean, you'd have to get me mentally examined after the performances that he has had. I still do hold, you know, a shred of faith that it's the same thing. He's done it. He did it all through college. We know he can be effective.
So did Brian Wellington.
That doesn't mean he can ever put it together.
You son of a bitch.
But we know he has that capability.
Right.
If there's anybody in the world I want to team him with, it's Mickey Callaway.
I agree.
Forget about the he looks like he did out of UCLA stuff. Let's focus back on the more things that could be quantifiable. Did they come to an agreement on what his mechanics should look like? Is he actually making progress on that? We know that those are things Mickey Callaway got Ubaldo straightened out on. If that's actually true, they're miles ahead of where Kevin Towers and the Diamondbacks are because they couldn't agree on what pitch to call, let alone what his mechanics should look like.
Let alone whether he should carry a giant 20-foot javelin on his shoulder.
Right, I mean, but that's the reality. As far as Carrasco, he has to be on the team.
Has to be.
He's out of options.
So let me ask you this.
I said bullpen.
Did the 2013 Cleveland Indians overachieve? Were they overachievers?
Pitching or batting?
As a team.
It almost can't be deciphered that way because the hitting vastly underachieved.
Right.
The pitching vastly overachieved.
Yep, I agree.
So, you know, you had bad years from Cabrera. You had a bad year from Swisher, bad year from Bourne, average year from Santana, good start, bad finish from Kipnis, bad year from third base, whoever donned that number. Brantley had a good year. Gomes had a good year. The pitching, though, other than Masterson, there's no one that I right now will sit here, I put money down and say he can do that again. There's not a single.
I believe they had the second most strikeouts in American League. Behind Detroit, as a staff, yeah.
Oh, they had tons of complete games.
Oh yeah,
I mean their pitching was phenomenal last year.
But that's the thing.
Also, I think
it's the same as with Liriano. It's the same as with Volquez. It's the same with Charlie Morton. You did it once, but you haven't done it enough to convince me
that you're gonna do it again.
That's
right.
You.
Yeah,
you know, Masterson's done it multiple times. So to me, I look at Masterson, and I'm like, okay,
you've got an idea of what you're going to get.
I have a pretty good idea what I'm going to get. But the rest of them, just rolling the dice, man. Of course, if you look at it from last year, we had way more doubts at this time last year. If I had said those four names last year, you'd be like, Corey Kluber, really? The one who got Klubered by the Tigers? Right?
Who now has a secret society named after him?
You'd say Danny Salazar. Who's that? Mm-hmm. Unless you were, you know, following our site. Right. And the only two you'd say is, okay, Masterson and McAllister. And a lot of people last year would have said McAllister's a four. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man.
I guess we'll see. So how
I saw McAllister debut. Was not so pretty against the Blue Jays.
No, not so great.
Can I throw in that just
July 7th,
for the record,
2011,
the Cleveland Indians have now officially won the Ubaldo Jimenez trade. Like, we can just mark that down.
Palmer's now a Oakland A.
He's an Oakland A, yeah.
I think that's safe to say.
That was a win.
But it was in question for a while. I don't think you would have been saying that in May of last year.
But here's the thing, though. In May of last year, even if that Ubaldo finishes the season, is he still...
He's at least pitching in the majors.
Yeah, beat out what you would have got from Palmer. I mean...
Right, yeah. Now I get what you're saying.
It's sad because I saw AJ... Not AJ. Yeah, AJ White, right?
Alex White.
I saw him the game he got hurt against the Reds.
I was listening to that game on the radio.
He was outstanding.
I was so optimistic. I was driving home. There was a certain...
I want to say it was May.
Certain smell in the air. The grass was greener. Yeah. The sky was bluer.
I think it was like May 20th, 19th of 2011. He got hurt. Great game. He looked great. Palmer, we saw at Akron.
Yeah, he looked good.
A little bit spotty, but had good stuff. Looked pretty good.
He labored, but he looked good.
Right, exactly. There's a lot of hope there. And all of a sudden,
yeah,
they really hadn't done anything.
They ain't done nothing.
Well, I think we've definitely gone over our allotted time for the week. Where are we at?
116.
Ooh, setting records. So that's going to wrap it up for this week. We'd like to again thank our listeners and ask if you're listening to us on iTunes that you give us a rate and review. You can check us out on the web at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter @tristatebb and check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So for the Ginger Prince and Jason Ruggiero, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you soon.